I'm going to just say a word about myself, just because it's sort of interesting that here in the slide we talk about ASO, ACO, local employers, and market alignment, because I've actually spent over 10 years in each of those in my career. I started two health plans, so I've been in the health plan world. I organized self-funded employers in Knoxville, in Tennessee and South Carolina into coalitions to work with people like you. So I've been in the local self-funded employer market over a decade, and then I was a provider. I was a senior vice president at three large health systems, Methodist in Memphis, Christ Hospital in Cincinnati, and then the Catholics in Knoxville. So actually, my career sort of aligns these three stakeholders. So we're going to talk about your most important client is your owner. We're going to talk about your most important partner is your owner. And what you just said about your owner is kind of where I'm headed. Okay, I've got a... there it is. So Chicago has the Cubs, but Chicago has a lot of great things. And so I visited last year Chicago and went to the Field Museum. And how many of you have been to the Field Museum? Well, you've seen Sue, right? Sue's in the lobby. You can't miss Sue. And I put the slide up. I actually took this picture. I'm proud of it. I actually got it focused. I don't usually do that well. And I'm really proud of this picture. And I put it up here for a very, very important reason. Because the industry that I've spent my entire career in, the healthcare industry, and that you're in, is really a dinosaur, isn't it? And it's really easy to prove because the very first speaker of this conference showed you a chart. You remember the chart? Wages, 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 health insurance, health insurance. Remember that and the gap? Folks, it's over. That's unsustainable. The climate for our industry and the environment, we are now dinosaurs living in this environment. And so we ought to all take pretty seriously what is basically a crisis in America, which is unsustainable healthcare costs. So what happened after the dinosaurs? Well, these little mammals were crawling around. And after whatever the great calamity was that ended the world for dinosaurs was perfect for these little mammals. So who are these little mammals in healthcare? Well, they all go by acronyms. One of the little mammals is called ACO. Another little mammal is called MACRA, right? Another little mammal is called HPN, High Performing Network. All these little new acronym mammals are down there in the bottom of the forest getting ready to grow up in our industry and replace the dinosaur. Your owners have been in the golden years. If your owners did not make a lot of money the last 6 or 7 years, there is something wrong with your owner. I was a hospital administrator, right? And by the way, my MBA is in marketing, not finance. So I had to go into hospital administration because the finance is very simple. The finance is, we hope to make money. In Tennessee, it's hard to do. It's other states, you can make money in Medicaid, but in Tennessee, that's very hard to do. Medicare, God, if we could just break even on Medicare, we'll be happy. Maybe make a little money. What's the last segment? Commercial. It's real simple. When you're a hospital administrator, not only do you want to fill up the beds because of fixed costs, which I'll talk about in a minute, but you want your patient mix to just slide it 2%. Just change your patient mix a little bit toward commercial and make a lot of money. Have you ever heard of, I built two networks, Tennessee, statewide network in Tennessee, South Carolina, so I had negotiated with a lot of hospitals. Of course, I used to be a hospital administrator, so kind of understood where they were going. But have any of you ever heard of rates where you reimburse a hospital 200% of Medicare? You ever seen that before? Raise your hand. Everybody's seen that, right? Come on now. Okay, I break it. Now think through how, this is why a marketing guy can do hospital finance. Think through. I break even at Medicare. I charge commercial 200% of Medicare. What's the profit margin? It's not 20%. It's a lot more than that. Yeah, they did. They probably gave you the overall profit margin, not the commercial profit margin. And so large employers are figuring that out. And this is part of the change. Now, the reason that your owner should have made a lot of money is one simple reason. The reduction in uncompensated care, because the marketplace opened up. And as we know, uncompensated care went down by about a half because the charity that used to come to the hospital actually has insurance, the marketplace. They actually now, they're like almost as good as commercial. Hell, this is great. If you're a hospital, you're making tons of money. If your owner didn't know that, there's something wrong operationally. Because most of them did, nationally. I call it the three M's, Medicare, Medicaid, Marketplace. I refer to the exchange and healthcare reform as the marketplace. So now this golden age for the dinosaurs is over. It's over because of the direction of the arrows, right? What's happening to the three M's, Medicaid, Medicare, Marketplace? What is very likely to happen? Well, Paul Ryan says we're going to figure out a way to stop giving away Medicaid like we've been doing. And then some others say, you know that tax with healthcare reform that we put on Medicare to make it more sustainable? And we think we're going to take that tax from the wealthy. We're going to take that back. And then marketplace subsidy, where's that going? It is very likely the three M's are going to be funded less. Now, will there be increases? Yeah, but they won't keep up with trend, right? So what does that mean about uncompensated care for your owner? It's obvious, right? Goes up. And so what probably will happen, since they got to raise prices, all the providers, we're back to robust medical inflation, which has actually been the environment that's getting rid of dinosaurs. So the environment's about to heat up again for your owner. And your owner board members, I'm sure, in their board meeting, they're talking about, what are we going to do with all this uncompensated care that's on its way back? Because AHA's been lobbying Congress, right? What has the American Hospital Association and the physicians been telling Congress? What do the lobbyists tell Congress? Don't change a thing. Please don't change it. Of course, they're going to change it, right? But this time, after 30 years of working in healthcare, I actually have hope. It's been a tough road for 30 years. I'm sort of the eternal optimist. I studied under Don Berwick. I believe in quality. Actually studied outside of Boston with Don Berwick. And for 30 years, I've been hoping for us to actually transform the delivery system. And oh my God, we just might do it this time. I think that we are prepared. I believe that I have visited a number of, in the last year, as I built the model that I'm going to tell you about, I visited many ACOs, talked to many health systems, and I am convinced, and after 30 years of not seeing it happen, it took quite a bit to convince me, but I got excited again that the delivery system has actually committed this time. They have actually committed to volume to value, payment reform, clinical integration, and the whole delivery system reform. Really, the catalyst for that was who? Was what? It's built in ACA. So when people say that healthcare reform is really insurance reform, they missed a few pages. There's a lot of delivery system reform built into healthcare reform. And CMS in the Innovation Center did what? Created MIPS, MACRA, bundled payment. They accelerated the change, because now, like, I work with doctors on MACRA. Do you realize if you're a doctor group and you don't do well on MACRA, what percent of your revenue could you lose? or there's an opportunity to actually gain on the other side. What kind of swing? 9% of your Medicare payments in a few years could be lost, or you could maximize it in a bonus. That is a lot of money if you got a lot of Medicare patients. MACRA will become meaningful. So CMS, through its kind of punitive way, has stimulated all of the providers. Because in your hospital, how much of their book of business is Medicare? Half, at least, right? So this is half their revenue we're talking about. Same for a lot of primary care doctors who treat, you know, who is using health care? It's the baby boomers that are now on that are aging, right? By the way, one of the scariest numbers in healthcare is this number, and I'm in this group. So are you, Keith. We're in this same group. How many new baby boomers go on Medicare every single day, including the weekend? 10,000 a day. Think about that. Taxpayers are picking up 10,000 older people who use healthcare a lot every day, including weekends. The baby boomers are here. We have arrived at our destiny called Medicare and Social Security. So, yeah, and you young guys are paying for it, right? You got that figured out, right? So that's a crisis, folks. That's a crisis. And Medicare then is, and government payment is so important, they drive the market, and they are driving delivery system reform. That's my point here. And it's bipartisan. Now, it's not bipartisan in a big way, you know, but there is a few people on the other side of the aisle who are willing to work with a few people on that side of the aisle, and they've actually kept, even Tom Price has basically endorsed what we call the payment reform of Medicare, except he has a little short bundle payment. The Holy Grail. This is the quest. This is the King Arthur quest if you work in healthcare. Eliminating waste in healthcare by actually improving the underlying clinical quality and cost. You can improve all day long your ASO systems efficiency, which is 15% of the total premium. And those guys over there called your owner, if they don't improve what they're doing, they just offset everything you could ever do, right? And yet, if they improve just a little bit, the total premium go down, even if you don't improve. Folks, the name of the game is there. It's the 80-85% of the premium. Now, that is no surprise to you all. I think the only thing that might surprise you is that you could influence that. I think you've always just accepted it. Presbyterian's not going to change their fee schedule. You just accept that, right? But here today, we're going to talk about how to be persuasive with your owner to be your key partner, to offer a high-performing network, and to not undercut just through cutting fees like we've done for 50 years, but to actually go out with a unique, different, sustainable, lower, high-quality product. And you do that through quality improvement, of course. Better care really does equal better cost. And sloppy care really does equal higher cost. So I think of a health plan kind of different than you do at the moment, I think. I think of a health plan as a virtual entity. Like it doesn't really have an address. Now, I know you guys do, but think about the components for self-funded. You got to have a network. What if that were a one hospital network, one health system network, many hospitals, but one health system network? Let's call that an ACO. Merging, trying to integrate with doctors, not nearly as mature as Loveless or Presbyterian. I'm in the Southeast where we're at the beginning of that curve. And then think about having the backroom services. You got a network, you got backroom services, and you're taking risk. That's a health plan, right? Network, I built two of them. I think it came down to a network, back room, let's take some risks, set aside our reserves, get licensed by the insurance department. But then, of course, if you're ERISA, you don't have to do any of that, and you can take risk. So think about a partnership, not so much a salesmanship, but think about a partnership between three major stakeholders in a market. Suppose the employer viewed you as a partner, not a vendor. Now, we all say we want to be their strategic partner, but now we all know for 20 years that that's just a phrase that people use. That rarely happens, right? But suppose that could happen. Suppose there is a strategic multi-stakeholder partnership between one health system, can't be two. I'll explain that in a minute. And backroom services, which you guys are, right? You're the ASO. And ERISA. You basically got a health plan without an address. There are four factors at least that are driving us to vertical integration. Vertical integration means fuzziness between the health plan and your owner, the health system. It means they're starting to act like each other. Take Aetna, for example. Big into this space, right? Building and United building a high-performing network, which now that may be lip service, but Aetna's, I think, is real. Cigna has a very confusing model, but all the big players have figured out they got to do something in this space that you compete with. And it's because technology is driving us to integration. 20 years ago, I went to a conference with some national speakers about integration in healthcare. It's 20 years later, and we still haven't done that, right? One of the big barriers was IT. We couldn't get the doctor practice management system talking to the hospital system, talking to the health insurance company system. By the way, I got frustrated as a patient. I actually did this. I probably shouldn't tell my stories here, but so recently I was sick and I couldn't make one of your conferences, and I ended up in my ENT doctor's office, and I promise you, I filled out my name, address, and demographic information four times. On the fourth time, I was like, come on now. Come on. I went up to the poor receptionist and I said, look, I've already filled this out three times. Do I really have to do this fourth one? She said, yes, you do. I said, have you ever heard of electronic health record? She said, I have, and I told the doctors, but they're not listening to me. Okay, that's fair enough. Consumer engagement. They are alive and well, and they're called the millennials, and they are going to change what we do, and it is going to be, I'm really interested in the electronic stuff you're doing. I think that's very much part of the future, and efficiency. High-performing networks, already talked about, as part of this whole integration thing, and then volume to value is pushing. Medicare is pushing all of us that way. By the way, Medicaid is too, because when they delegate it to the states, they're going to try things like what Kasich did in Ohio. Anybody from Ohio, where he divided up the state and did Medicaid? And Texas is doing that for children's, and Alabama just did it. And I mean, Alabama just did it. We're always last. You know, I'm from Alabama. We're always last. Now we're doing it. So this is an early chart of the model that we developed, but it basically says something pretty simple. I think I'll get on this side for a minute. The employer, if they would just do some tweaking to their benefits, they would be value-based, meaning they would pay for the right kind of care. You know, I won't try to name various things at this point. The provider, with a little more effort and thought, will provide value-based care, meaning they will do the right things. So the employer will, through the benefit plan, pay for the right thing, and that will incent and reinforce the health system who's integrated to do the right thing. That's a beautiful model. Do the right thing, get rewarded to do the right thing. It means I'll do some more of the right thing because I'm getting rewarded. Now, if I do the right thing and I don't get paid, I might slow down doing the right thing, which some hospitals have done. So your owner needs the self-funded market. Maybe this is the most important thing I'm going to say, so I'll say it real slow emphasize it. Your owner needs a commercial business model to reinforce the integration where they're doing the right thing. And they need to do the right thing. Medicare is going to pay them a little better. The commercial market needs to reinforce that. And you know what? That is good for your local community. And y'all are local health plans. And Ashley, I believe in you. I I have competed with the big ones, and I think they're dinosaurs and we got to be mammals, basically. It is in your local market, your community. What happens if your big health system actually does better care? You begin to solve the underlying problem in healthcare in your local community, which could actually attract jobs and plants and bring more jobs to Albuquerque. You know, that's what you want to do in your local community. Be proud of your health system. But they need you to get more commercial business to reward them to do the right thing, because they are primed. Medicare has primed the pump for them to do the right thing. But let me tell you a story of an ACO in the South. I won't say what state. You might guess who it is. You're not going to believe this story, but I actually was on site, and the CEO executives told me this story. Of course, I did not gasp out. You know, I did inside. I had to hold my composure. So they spent, this is a very rich, very big system. They spent $100 million on IT over 5 years. $100 million in IT over 5 years. To do something they call population health, which, by the way, is a little flaky. I said, well, you know, have you used it? Yeah, right. Once. We used it once. And how did that work out for you? Well, we had a lot of allergy cases coming to the emergency room. So we did population health. And now they don't come anymore. And I was like, so what do you think? Well, we lost a lot of revenue doing the right thing. The one time we used this expensive system, we lost money. They don't come to the ER anymore. They did not have a business model to pay themselves to do population health. They just stopped utilization. And so are those doctors and is that hospital motivated to do population health again? Right. And they're actually struggling. They're in a reorganization mode. I think the CEO got in trouble with the board of directors over this issue. So that's what you can do for your best partner, your owner, is get them money from the commercial market to pay them to do the right thing. Not to pay them for anything, but to pay them to do the right thing, which we're going to get to a little more of that in detail. So who is this green stuff? Who is that? That is you. That's the ASO business. You will bring the market together. Market alignment. Remember the name of the talk? The employer, and now I'm talking about self-funded. And your system, you will bring them together in a value-based system that rewards your owner for doing the right thing that transforms healthcare in your local community. And that's your job. You get to be King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table on the quest to eliminate waste from healthcare and to reward those who take waste out of healthcare. Right? So let's talk now about I happen to be a fan of Don Berwick. I'm also a fan of Michael Porter. Anybody else know who he is? You have to be pretty nerdy to know who he is. Oh, there's the nerds. Okay. Did you read his book in 2006 about healthcare?
I actually met him, and I wasn't as impressed with him.
Right. That's true. I've actually met him. I spent a week at Harvard. By the way, I should tell you about that week in Harvard. So I go on campus at Harvard to do this week course with Michael Porter and a few others. And my IQ, literally, I'm from Alabama, so this was important to me. My IQ actually went up 10 points when I got on campus at Harvard. I mean, for an Alabamian, for his IQ to go up, you know, 10 points, that is a big deal. There was a problem, though. When the week was over and I left campus, it went down 15 points. There was a net loss somehow when I was at Harvard. But I met Michael Porter, and you're right, he's not as impressive, but he's actually a world-renowned consultant. He travels to other countries, redesigning their economies and many industries, including healthcare. And so he wrote this book in 2006, which is still relevant. Some pieces of it are a little bit outdated, but it's worth reading. So Michael Porter says that your strategy for any business anywhere, not just healthcare, is always something between lower cost or higher price, higher price, meaning there's something about you that you can demand a higher price from your customer. And he says it's always that. He says if your strategy doesn't get you at a lower price or doesn't get you at a higher value to get a higher price, then you don't have a strategy. And that's the world-renowned strategist, market strategist, Michael Porter. You may not agree with that, but that's what he says. So he says when you figure out what your strategy is, which either gets you a higher price, you know, like some fancy boutique clothing store can get a higher price than Walmart, right? There's a reason. There's a strategy. Or if you're Walmart, you're down there with that strategy. You got to have one of those strategies. You got to have a strategy somewhere in there that does that. He would say that is your value proposition. Now, how does this apply to healthcare? Well, in his book, he studied the healthcare market. And in his book about healthcare, American healthcare, this is a exact quote. I think it is. Today in U.S. healthcare, that was 2006, things haven't changed a lot, where I believe there's opportunity to improve medical outcomes and reduce costs. At the same time, the slogan, quality is free, might serve as a useful wake-up call. Now, that isn't real meaningful to you until I tell you the story he tells in the book, which makes this meaningful. What he's saying is profound. What he's saying, you actually can do both these things at the same time in healthcare, and that makes it a very unusual market because you usually can't. You actually can raise your quality and lower your price at the same time and have a double value proposition. That's what he's saying. And he's saying that's extremely unusual. He said one example of when that happened in the past is our people from Detroit still here? Okay, this is for you. He said the example of the past is when Lexus came to America, had a higher quality car at a lower price. We all know that's true, right? Not true today, I understand. Y'all have come back, good. But what did you have to do? You got decimated because Lexus had a double value proposition for the customer. You actually had a better car at a lower price. And it created chaos in the American auto industry, which, thank God, we're coming out. We are doing better. What if you could do that in healthcare? What if you could go to a large employer and say, I can give you your health benefits cheaper, and I'll guarantee it's higher quality clinically. It would not be a three-year sales process that we talked about yesterday. It's a long sales process. It would not be that. What happens when you actually can, the customer actually gets that kind of value? One or two customers in your local market realizes, oh my God, Keith told me the truth. He actually delivered lower prices on the 85% side. I'm not talking about your SOP at all. He actually delivered lower cost and higher quality for my employees. That's going to get around Greenville. And you're going to sell the hell out of it, and it won't take 3 years to do it. But you got to have the double value proposition. How do you get that? That's the trick, right? Well, now I'm going to quote our friend from Intermountain. I've been teasing her for 2 days. I'm going to misquote her right here, Coralie. By the way, I thought one of the best talks of the conference. Very good. So Porter also says that this double value proposition has to sit on top of something he calls, and it's awkward wording, but I'll tell you what he means by it here in a minute, value chain of activities. What he means is that if you come from, I understand a lot of you used to be HMOs and fully insured, you know, right, and you're struggling, some of you, to be self-funded, sell to the self-funded side. Well, what he means is that all of your activities over here, like that came from the HMO, fully insured days, we built all of our activities to support this product. Porter says that if you now go over and try to compete in this market with TPAs for self-funded, now he doesn't say it, but I'm applying it to you, but he gives the theory. If any industry tries to go over and now enter this market, and they're going up against, let's say, those shops that sell high-end clothing. Now they're going to compete with Walmart. I mean, can you see that? You can't see that. You know why? Because these folks, TPA self-funded, they have this set of value chain activities that makes this high performing. Now you come from over here with this set of value chain activities and you try to do that. There's a disconnect. You'll never be high performing over here when these activities were built for this purpose. You have to change, create the same value chain. And that's why some of you said you bought a TPA. Okay? That's why you bought a PTA, TPA. That's why you're product manager. Because you have to go in there and you have to change or recreate the what's called the value chain of activities that support this product, because they'll never, you'll never perform well with these competitors when they have this and all you got's that. Did you follow that? Did you follow that? Here's the quote. What did you say you did? I had to go make a self-funded sales team, a self-funded claims team, a self-funded this, a self-funded that. Boy, when I heard you say that, I was like, Michael Porter, another Michael Porter disciple. That's true. Now, let me tell you how to do that. Well, just a minute. First, let me quote the famous Harvard professor one more time. Don't try to be bigger or better. You know, that was profound because I have an MBA in marketing and I thought it was all about being bigger and better. And he says, no. Don't try to be bigger and better. Try to be unique. One of our speakers talked all about being unique. Yesterday, I think it was. He was absolutely right. He was absolutely right. Don't try to be, I'm going to go compete with Blue Cross, and I'm going to play on their playing field and try to be bigger like them. That does not work. You got to change the field on which you play. You shouldn't be playing football. You should be playing soccer. You're on the wrong field. Or maybe if you're in Nashville, hockey. I think hockey, you know, is the thing. Be unique. Meaning your value proposition has to fit you, and it has to be very unique. Can't just be about bigger and better. So really, the market opportunity is very simple, isn't it? Regional health plans, you guys, as ASOs, partnering with a high-performing ACO, I hope that's your owner. Actually, it doesn't have to be, though, right? For some of you, you're allowed to provide ASO services to other health systems. So hell, go to some other part of the state that doesn't compete with your owner and do it with them. If you want to try it in a new market, you know, if your owner won't do it. I actually know an ASO doing that. Their owner won't do it, and they actually found a large health system in another part of the state doesn't compete. Actually, they do compete, but they're trying not to compete. And doing this. To offer value to the self-funded commercial market. Now, this chart says a lot. Don't take it literally because there's a bunch of assumptions behind it and it wouldn't apply exactly in your case. But the algorithm does apply. So this is hospital math integrated with health insurance math. And remember, I've been on both sides of that. So I drew up a little formula that puts them both together. And this tells your owner, and we can talk here in a minute about how you make the case to your owner to do this. I have three suggestions. And this is one of them. This chart says, if I could just get 5,000 self-funded lives, which isn't a whole lot. I mean, in Knoxville, I can get 5,000. It's not 50,000. Remember, 5,000. My average PMPM spend, you know, $350. And let's not debate PEPM, please. Let me go through my formula. And, you know, you adjust this for PEPM, right? How much revenue is that? 5,000 people. And they're self-funded. I mean, they're not fully insured, right? Not right now, we're talking about self-funded. What's flowing through your financial banks is the ASO, $21 million, right? Okay, so now let's just say administration costs, you know, I'm including stop loss and ASO fees and broker fees, everything you can think of that's not medical, We're going to make it pretty high, 20%, just to be conservative. So that means the medical loss ratio or the medical spend, which your owner calls revenue. You notice how we talk different, right? Medical expense is to them medical revenue. It means there's $16.8 million in that self-funded group of money that goes to them. If it's a one-hospital system, if it's a one-health system and there's no leakage, which I'll show you how that could be true, and they get all that money, they and their friends, and I say their friends because the medical staff's their friends, and they get part of the money, right? They and their friends, and if they have a piece of the PBM, they and their friends get $16.8 million if you just get 5,000 lives. That's roughly true in any market. Now, there's a lot of assumptions, but you'd have to customize this to your market. It could be better than that in some of your markets. Medical cost, well, here's your owner. Here's your owner's friends. And they love to please their friends because they bring patients. In fact, back in the day when I became a hospital executive, there was really only one question they asked you in the interview. Will you piss off the medical staff? And if your answer was no, never, they hired you. Because the one thing you don't do as a hospital administrator is piss off the medical staff. There are direct contracts with, like if you don't do children's, or if there's some big, you know, center of excellence, there's a little bit that goes out, but there's a direct contract, it's not leakage. And then you control this. And one of the speakers told you how important it was, but you already know this, to control specialty drugs, right? I'm telling you, when I managed a health plan, one of the things that kept me up at night was specialty drugs. I wish I had the solution then that I know of now. I should know of a solution that can save you regularly, most customers, 20% on your specialty drug spend. So if you have that kind of pharmacy management, then you actually can take this, offer it to a large employer 15% below their broad network. And at 10%, we've heard two speakers now, because I don't know if you remember, I asked the question yesterday of the Milliman Atcher. I wanted to get her on record for this talk today. We've heard two speakers, and I can show you four business cases where I've been involved, where if you change the premium 10%, you'll get 75% of the members when you're up against a broad network. So the way my model works is this way. You go to a benefit manager, and you say, do not change anything you're doing. They love that, because what's the value proposition to a benefit manager? Y'all already said it in this conference. No hassle. That's the value proposition. By the way, what's the value proposition to the CFO? Cost containment. What's the value proposition to a CEO? Do you know? If you're talking to a CEO of a company, what do you say? You don't talk about cost, really. And you don't talk about hassle, because he didn't care if his HR department has to work a little harder. What do you say to him or her? Healthy, productive workforce, they'll be there every day making your widgets. That's what you say. I can increase productivity. And actually, there's a way to do that. You actually can decrease sick days. When you decrease sick days, I've actually done that for employers, and they're like amazed at the return for productivity, which had nothing to do with anything else other than making the workforce a little healthier. So you go to a self-funded employer, and you say, I can offer you all of this. You don't change a thing because you got United. I'm doing a case in Tennessee like this. You got United, broad network. You love them. Your broker loves them. You'll never leave them. I understand. I love them too. Go ahead and hug them. Keep them. Cool. Keep your broker. Keep your reinsurance pool. It's all going to be in the same pool anyway. Just keep it. So everything's fine. There's no adverse selection. They're like, how could you do this? Well, just let me worry about that. But I can do that for you. And you can offer it the premium 15% below. Now, it's only one health system, and there are three health systems in United. So what we're going to do is on enrollment day, we're going to explain it, make it very clear. People who enroll for a year in this one, they don't get to go to those others because there's no out-of-network benefit. It's not a tiered network. There is no benefit if you don't go to my health system. And so it's 15% lower. Yeah. Not only for you, but you know that big deductible they have? 15% lower for all out-of-pocket max because the discount applies to that. They're like, wow, sign me up. And then I say, by the way, it's higher quality. And they say, oh, don't worry about that. Just sign me up. They don't care about the quality the first year. They will care about the quality in the third year because that's how you hold the price sustainable. So when you do that, and you offer that to a self-funded employer with 1,000 lives, see how I'm doing on time. By the way, I got to get to questions here. When you do that with 1,000 people, and there are three big hospital systems in that market, your hospital system owner is getting what share? 40%. And so when you offer to 1,000 people and they can get their providers, you're going to cannibalize, right? So those 400 people come over, but they were already using that system. And so the CFO of the health system says to me, you're just cannibalizing my business. I said, hold on. Go back to my chart. So the first year, I can give you 500 of that 1,000 instead of 400. How would you like to have 100 more people that used to go to one of the other two systems at United? 100 new ones, huh? Well, let's say on 100 people, I might get an inpatient and 6 outpatients, and my docs are going to get a whole bunch of business, and I like for them to get business. And it's commercial business, right? So it changes my patient mix a little bit. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention, this isn't Medicaid. This is commercial business. Yeah, that's right. And they start, you whip out their calculators, and they compute. And basically, I can show you a spreadsheet where I computed it for them. And it shows that the profit on a few extra people in an industry where fixed overhead is really high and it's commercial business is stellar. It's a whole lot more than 20%. A whole lot more than 20%. In 3 years, actually, in year two in the model, they break even on their discount. They did cannibalize 40%. But once they get up to 600 of those people, I think it maxes out at 750. When they get 750 and they used to get 400, oh my God, the return on investment is like 300% on their discount. And what, you know, they're all about this whole risk sharing thing. I go around telling hospitals not to risk share because so many of them have gotten in trouble. You've read about the Catholic systems in Ohio who sold their health plan and the one out west. So, yeah, they don't understand. I tell the hospital, you should not be in the business of taking insurance risk, meaning the employer has a good year or bad year. You don't want any of that. Because guess what? In a bad year, the HR director at the employer loves you. Why does he love you? Well, hell, my bad year would have been 15% worse had I not gotten that discount from you. You don't have to take their bad year risk. That's what stop loss does. Do not take any insurance risk. What did they put at risk? What's their profit margin on 200% of Medicare? And they did a 15% discount? They put one small portion of their profit at risk. They'll never go down below break even. They'll always make money. It's very little risk for a health system. It's very little risk for your owner to do this. And the benefit of those few new patients is tremendous to them. So, three things to go to your owner with, and let's just take questions. So, three things to go to your owner with is, one, wouldn't you like to change the patient mix a little bit? Two, now why do you care if it's fully insured or self-funded? Isn't the medical spend the same? Don't you get the same revenue? Now, why do you really care? So it's self-funded lives. Does it matter? You still get your $16 million. So you get to change the patient mix. You put very little at risk. And you get new business. Really, there's kind of like four reasons. So you go to your owner and say, how would you like to have more medical spend? Doesn't matter if it's self-funded, right? How would you like to have some new patients that you never had before? How profitable are those to you? How would you like to change the Medicaid, Medicare mix to more commercial? You know, if you can't convince them with that, go find a health system somewhere out of your market and do it with them. Questions? Questions? Yes?
Hang on.
How do you save 20% on specialty drug? Just kind of left that hanging out there.
I was going to ask the same question.
Okay, how do we do it?
Yeah.
It cost $175,000 to answer that question, but I'll give you a teaser.
Okay.
We take your claims for $175,000, run it through a system, a software package. We find a bunch of people, not a bunch, I'm sorry, let me take that back. On specialty drugs, you only have to find a few. So we find a few people who have the wrong site of care. The therapy is being done in a doctor office hospital setting and mark up the drug four times. That's one place. Another place is there are these hidden rebates and discounts that are rarely collected. We find those drugs for you and you go collect those from the manufacturer. A third is people are getting the drug off protocol. They should never have had that drug. The doctor gave it to them. You eliminate that drug. If they need another drug, it's cheaper usually. So you get people on the right protocol. It's amazing how doctors aren't putting them on the right protocol. The other is genetic coding. They should have gotten a genetic test to get it. They didn't. They shouldn't be on the drug till they do. Those are just a few of the techniques. So give me your claims, and we'll run it through and find them for you. And then what we do for clients is show them exactly where it is and say, hey, you can have anybody you want. We've done our job. You can just go have anybody you want, correct your systems, and save the money, or we'll actually go do that for you, right? That's how you do it. Other questions? None? Jeez. Maybe I wasn't interesting enough. Yes, Kathy.
How much does the delivery system need to change the way in which they're delivering care to do all of this? Or is it just we keep doing business the way we always have?
Great question. I should have covered that. Obviously, it's the same Porter rule. If they're going to do this, they need to change the underlying activities. And let me tell you how many of them are doing it. There's a system that you would not think is innovative in Tennessee, but they have 100 new protocols. New ones, where they can show you the let me oversimplify. This is not a true case, but you'll get the point. So in this protocol, we always did an MRI for this protocol. You know, protocols and clinical algorithm. So for the treatment plan, the medical algorithm, we always did an MRI. It was just practice of medicine, right? So we found out that we only have to do an MRI on 5% of the people who present in this protocol. So now, if we have a decision tree, an algorithm, and we go off over here and we do an MRI, but 95% of them go through the protocol now and don't have an MRI, and I can show you that Mary Lou went in the protocol, didn't go off for some complication, came out of the protocol, and we saved the price of an MRI, $2,000. And then I tell the hospital system, wow, that was great. How much profit did you make on an MRI? $500. Okay, I'm going to write you a check for $500 representing the large employer. I'm going to pay your profit. And guess what? You didn't have any expense to get that. All you had to do was do the right thing. And I'm going to pay your profit. They're like, we never had people pay us profit for not doing care before, but that's capitation, isn't it? That's what we're doing. And you go back to the employer and say, okay, Mary Lou, I can show you. I have integrated the database. I can show you the clinical data, the claims data. Mary Lou Ashley went through a brand new protocol and we saved. You didn't have to pay for a $2,000 MRI. Can we write a check for $500? Oh, yeah. You mean I saved $1,500? Oh, this is great, Jerry. That's how I proved to the benefit manager in the first 12 months that I delivered lower price and better care. And, of course, who holds the money? You never, at the end of the year, ask an employer to write a check, right? So every month you're collecting a value-based fee, whereas who's holding that? The ASO. And then only releasing it when we can prove it. Does that answer your question, sort of? Yeah. So they do change their system. The answer is they change the protocols. And you use only the ones they've changed. You try not to use the old ones, right?
Jerry, question.
Yep.
From me.
Yeah.
Sorry in advance, it's going to end up being a little bit of a geeky question.
But no, it's all right.
I recently had an opportunity to work with a large self-funded plan that went out to market with RFPs to the large national carriers for high-performance networks or ACOs in a self-funded environment.
Yeah.
And it was a total fail.
Right.
And here's three reasons why. One was we found that the carriers, the ACO parts of their operations were totally not connected or disconnected from the self-funded side,
yeah.
So the claim shops that were paying self-funded claims had no experience paying claims off of an ACO platform. So that didn't work. The market-to-market, there was no uniformity market-to-market so far. Employers had population in more than one market. You couldn't deliver a uniform benefit across markets. That was the other. But the third one, and here's my question was, and we really never got to this, was the attribution methodology that nobody, and I'm talking about two of the BUCAs, I won't name which ones, that nobody had thought through how to employ the attribution or apply the attribution methodology on a self-funded platform. That's my geeky question. Has anybody really thought about that?
Yeah, well, I think I just explained it to you, how we do attribution. That is, we pay the value-based payment, not on, you know, these measures, which, by the way, I helped promote HEDIS 20 years ago in NCQA, so I believe in it, but not for this purpose. And we don't pay on, like, these performance measures. We pay by patient, not by measure. In other words, Mary Lou's a real person who went through a real protocol, which is a real value chain activity change, and coming out the end, we have already negotiated with the hospital the extra value of going through that protocol, meaning the waste or the outcome is better, and then we pay. We pay by patient. If you don't put any of our patients through your new protocols, you get zero. So we try to follow the 80-20 rule. Give us the 80% of your protocol. Give us the 20% of your protocols that 80% of our commercial business will go through, and you'll get some of it. So the attribution is straight to the protocol, and it rewards the doctor and the hospital, by the way. And it doesn't matter if it's inpatient or primary care. There are protocols across all of those. It's not just inpatient. And so the attribution is by patient who's identified. And if you can't show that to a benefit manager, you don't release their money. If the hospital failed to give you the right data, they don't get paid. You got to show me Mary Lou went through the protocol, and I've agreed to give you the profit for that. So attribution is resolved. Any other question? Okay, thank you.